how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Thursday, March 7th. I'm sure you've had enough of political analysts' analysis of the Super Tuesday Biden and Trump and Nikki Haley results, right? And as important as those were, because it's the presidential race, there were some other very interesting down-ballot races that have national implications as well that haven't gotten as much coverage. One of them is that Congressman Adam Schiff came in first in the primary for U.S. Senate in California. That's the race to succeed the late Senator Dianne Feinstein. But apparently Schiff helped his own cause by helping to raise money for the Republican he will now run against in November. What? Christian Paz, senior politics reporter at Vox, wrote up some of the interesting non-presidential Super Tuesday primaries, including the California one, and he joins us now. Hi, Christian. Thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you.
So the California Senate primary is different from many other primaries in that it's nonpartisan. Is that the right term? Democrats, Republicans, anyone else run in one unified primary? Is that right?
They run in one unified primary. It's been called, you know, similar to a jungle primary in other states, but the California, I'm a Californian, we call it a top two system, where it doesn't matter what party you're from. If you come in the top two slots, you'll be and don't win an outright majority, then you'll be a shoo-in for the general election show off.
Do you know why they do it that way? What's supposed to be better for democracy by having a unified primary rather than each party holding its own?
Right. The idea is, and it's a very recent thing also, the idea, there's both the grimy political reason, which is that it's California and it's easy to win as a Democrat in California. It's hard, especially if you're a Republican who hasn't, the party hasn't won a statewide race since 2006 to actually make it to the general election. So the Democratic reason, the pro-democracy reason, is that this way it gives Republicans a better opportunity of making it into the general election, because you still have a large number of voters. And then at the same time, it'll be better for democracy, because given that California is more democratic, more democratic options for folks who want to choose a Democrat, probably it'll be better for them in that way.
And more represents the electorate. So Adam Schiff is well known, among other things, I don't have to tell many of our listeners, for being the lead House manager for the first impeachment of Donald Trump. And he is what the New York Times calls Trump's chief congressional tormentor. Ha. But not to bury the lead, the headline here is Schiff helped a Republican to come in second in this unified primary, so Schiff wouldn't have to run in November against another Democrat. Would you put it that way?
I think that's pretty concise way to put it, because the big thing here was that Schiff did not want to have to go all in on more months of campaigning when it was kind of apparent from the start that he was going to be the favorite. And why not use the system in your favor? And people forget that I think the last time I checked, there are more Republican voters in California than there are in Florida. Part of what happens when you're California and the largest, most populous state in the country is you also have a lot of Republicans. And so if you get enough of those folks to tune in, they probably won't elect a Republican statewide, but they'll, with a divided Democratic field, they'll probably push somebody pretty high up. And so what Schiff and the campaign did was essentially give the Republican Steve Garvey, he's a baseball legend, a Dodgers first baseman, give him enough name recognition and remind people that, oh, he's actually running as a Republican. Okay, well then, if I'm upset at the Democrats this cycle, I might as well turn out in this primary and shake things up a little bit.
How did he do that? How did he help the Republican Steve Garvey? Was there funding of pro-Garvey advertising? Did he say nice things about him? Did he just use his name a lot? How did Adam Schiff, who, after all, most people in America who are not from California, not from his district, even in Southern California, only have heard of Adam Schiff, even though he's been around for a while, he's 63 years old, only have heard of Adam Schiff since Trump became president and he became this chief tormentor of Donald Trump through impeachment and everything. But, you know, Adam Schiff would, so that would surprise people, is my point, around the country. What, Adam Schiff, of all people, that partisan Democrat, helping a Republican? How did he do it?
Yeah, it's a very similar strategy to the one that was used by Democrats in 2022. I know a lot of those Democratic candidates were scrutinized for it because they were running ads essentially as if they were trying to criticize the Republican, but the actual subtext was these would run in Republican-heavy areas or with Republican-heavier audiences and, you know, let them know about, you know, planks in this candidate's, you know, platform that would be more appealing to them. So anything about, you know, Trump, allegiance to Trump, or having made MAGA comments or criticizing the integrity of the election, that was what was used in the midterms in some of these swing states and swing races. And it ended up working in the primary of getting the more extreme Republican to win the primary so that it would be a bit easier to contrast with the Democrat that was running in the race. And so what Schiff did was a little bit of that, a little bit of running, you know, sending mailers out, running television ads, talking about the Republican threat that Steve Garvey posed, which is kind of hard because Steve Garvey is not a politician. And I think the easiest way to describe it is, if any of the listeners here have watched Veep, there is actually a scene where the incumbent or the favorite to win a nomination is running against a baseball legend who is just talking in platitudes and doesn't really know anything about politics. And that's kind of a parallel here. But it was mostly about reminding Democrats, one, that this person is out there. And by extension, because a lot of these were running also in you know, pretty large media markets, exposing the fact that he's a Republican to Republican voters so that they would know that, oh, this person has said nicer things about Trump before. He's maybe not as crazy as other Republicans. Right. Good to know about him.
So it gave Republicans awareness of Garvey and motivation to bother to vote at all in that open primary in California so they could choose Garvey. Now, the Democrats Schiff was most trying to sideline are Congresswoman Katie Porter and Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Would it be right to say that Porter and Lee were both running or have records to the left of Adam Schiff?
Absolutely. And I think it kind of represents kind of some of the splits among progressives because Katie Porter is much more of a newer form of progressive, right? More focused on kind of a Bernie and Elizabeth Warren style economic populism. Her big thing has been antitrust legislation and going after the big banks and rich, you know, corporate C-suites and executives for spending and for hiking prices during the last few years. Whereas Barbara Lee is the older school progressive who made her name through anti-war activism, through social justice movements, through you know, very nitty-gritty community organizing, local networks like that, and a lot of that being in the Bay Area that she represents. And so it kind of showed that it would be hard for the progressive candidate to differentiate themselves or him or herself from the more centrist Adam Schiff, just because Schiff has been around for a while within the establishment and moderate wings of the Democratic Party. But now that there were two of those progressive candidates trying to distinguish themselves, it made it a bit of a bigger challenge. And also, the key division here is these are all well-known folks in California and also especially Schiff and Porter, very prolific fundraisers, which made this race incredibly, incredibly expensive for a safe Democratic seat. And also because it's California. California Senate seats don't often become available. And the fact that they that there were two open Senate seats in the last, 5 years is a lot of change that came to California.
Kamala Harris, if people don't remember, came out of the Senate from California to become, is that right? To become vice president, right? After she was attorney general there, and of course now with the passing of Dianne Feinstein. So how much is Democratic Party California furious at Adam Schiff, even as their Senate candidate, who they'll probably vote for now for the most part, for what looks like a dirty trick against two of their own, not to mention that it's a white male playing that help a Republican game to sideline two women, and one of them a woman of color at that?
It's interesting because I think that there would have been a lot more anger had Barbara Lee, formally conceded. I don't think she's actually conceded the election yet because famously California takes forever to count its ballots because it's massive and it sends ballots out to everyone. So there's a lot of mail-in ballots that are still to be counted. And then Katie Porter came out after the results. The first results were released and the election was called to say that, obviously attack Adam Schiff for dirty tricks and then use the term, to rig the election. And then that spawned a whole mess of other backlash to Porter because her argument was that she didn't take any outside, super PAC money, whereas Schiff did. And her argument was that, big spenders poured in a lot of money to boost Schiff and to attack her or to kind of skew her record. And so it was an argument that dark money and big money kind of pollute American politics, but the usage of the word rig, I think, definitely turned a lot of people off because that's the kind of language we've been hearing for years now from the Republican side. And so I think that also muddled the water of how much criticism Schiff would receive because Schiff did win. I mean, just about every major, population center in California. And right behind him came Steve Garvey and Katie Porter came in last, Katie Porter came in third and then Barbara Lee came in fourth, even in, LA County, even in like the Bay Area, in Orange County, one of those counties that has historically been a swing district now that it was historically a Republican district that has become a big swing district. Steve Garvey came in, first there, followed by Schiff, followed by Porter. Porter not being able to outperform Schiff even in her home county, you do wonder how much of this was rigging the system versus just being outspent and out campaigned. And it's California. It's expensive to run this, and it might be a good thing for Democrats outside of California for there not to be more money being poured into this this kind of black hole of California media markets and campaigning for the general.
If you're just joining us, my guest for another few minutes is Christian Paz, senior political reporter at Vox, on the very interesting U.S. Senate primary in California that didn't get as much attention, obviously, as the presidential primaries on Super Tuesday. Does this ever backfire? You said that this kind of tactic has been used in the past to help elevate Republicans to be the general election candidate against Democrats because the Democrats think, certain kinds of Trumpy Republicans, for example, would be easier to beat. But help the wannabe dictator to help save democracy could be a high-stakes gamble because what if the wannabe dictator wins and then destroys democracy? So has this ever backfired on the Democrats?
So we're going to get our first test probably in a presidential year this time around. The only real, track record that we have to compare against is the midterms when, it worked in Secretary of State races, in Senate races, in competitive House districts. Just about every one of those extremist Republicans that beat out a moderate that received help from the Democrats or from outside spenders lost the race to a Democrat. And so it paid off there, but obviously midterm electorates are very different from presidential electorates. And so obviously this is also California. The other place that we're going to get a test of this is in North Carolina, where there was a pretty important primary that happened there on the Republican side with Mark Robinson being, he's the current lieutenant governor, but he's been called a firebrand politician, you know, extremist, but some of those terms just aren't strong enough to capture how many incendiary things he said before about LGBTQ people, about women, about abortion rights, about, you know, gun control. And he beat out two other more moderate and conventional, not moderate, but conventional Republican candidates for the nomination to be the Republican Party's candidate for governor in North Carolina. And so he won that. Democrats there were definitely running ads about just how much of a threat he was. He'll face off against a pretty standard Democrat, the current Attorney General, Josh Stein, who's the Democratic.
And I wonder if you think that, you know, the fact that in North Carolina, the Republican gubernatorial candidate is going to be this radical, and oh my goodness, some of the things that he said, being LGBTQ is going to destroy civilization. He actually said that, right? Mm-hmm. And North Carolina, though, is a very important swing state in the presidential race, besides the governor race that guy is running in. So could it have implications for the presumed Biden-Trump matchup there?
Absolutely. I think North Carolina is unique in that it tends to vote for Republicans at the top of the ticket, but then down ballot, it's elected Democratic governors a few times, Democratic attorney generals. So there's a lot more ticket splitting that happens in North Carolina. And so that is another reason why it'll be important for Democrats to not just campaign positively on their side, but to just, you know, get people to know just what this candidate is saying. And then just to pivot back to California really quickly, the only other risk from elevating Steve Garvey and a Republican like this statewide is down ballot that Republicans remain engaged in congressional districts and swing districts that are up for grabs. That is the other, you know,
more
big
Republican
risk
turnout
that,
because they'll have Steve Garvey at the top of the ticket to vote for,
exactly,
who they think might win, even though they know Trump won't win California's electoral votes at the presidential level, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Just one possible correction of something that I said earlier. I think I said that Schiff was helping Garvey raise money for his campaign. Is that inaccurate as opposed to just he was helping Garvey raise awareness of his campaign?
It was the awareness, which by extension could have helped him raise money. But Schiff, you know, was spending pretty heavily on elevating this profile.
Christian Paz, senior politics reporter for Vox. Very interesting stuff. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.